Welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm Joe Carr. Today, we present a 2018 conversation that Liz Kay had with Tirza Lima-Neves. Dr. Lima-Neves graduated from PC in 2000. She's now a political science faculty member at Johnson C. Smith University in Charlotte, North Carolina. She'll be back in Providence this week to receive the college's Martin Luther King Vision Award at the annual Martin Luther King Convocation on Friday, January 24th. In this interview, Dr. Lima-Neves talks about her inspiring life story, which includes emigrating to the United States as a teenager and flourishing as an academic while at Providence College.
Dr. Lima-Neves was born in Cape Verde, an island nation off the coast of West Africa, and she researches Cape Verdean studies, African diaspora politics, and African women in development. Dr. Lima-Neves is also the co-founder of Poderosa, an international conference on Cabo Verdean women. The conference was held at Providence College on Saturday, March 10th. Tirza, welcome back to campus.
Thank you so much.
Now, you focus on Cape Verdean studies, and the country has a unique history among African nations. Can you tell us a little about it?
Right. So I focus on the Cape Verdean community in the United States in particular, and how they engage with Cape Verde for the sake of development. Cape Verdeans in the United States have the largest community of Cape Verdeans outside of Cape Verde, followed by Portugal. And so it's very significant and important that we study this community and see the types of ways that they engage and help development at home.
And so can you tell us about identity, Cape Verdean identity? So how do people define themselves when they're here, when they're in the nation?
Yeah. So let's see. We only have 1 hour, right? So the way that Cape Verdeans identify themselves, it's very multifaceted, and it's very, some people would find it complex. But I think that as it relates to their encounter with the United States being a space that has been a country that's faced some really harsh discriminatory racial practices, I think that's what makes it so interesting. Because you have this island nation in the coast of West Africa, arguably the first Creole nation in the world, meaning that it's made up of African but also European populations. And then they come and they form community in the United States as early as the 1800s.
And what brought people to the U.S.? It was the
whaling
industry.
Yep. Whaling industry, as a matter of fact. And so you see some of the first communities being formed in the New Bedford area. But at first, the Cape Verdeans did not form communities. So they would come and do the seasonal work, and then they would go back. But then these whalers, you know, with the Industrial Revolution, they began to stay here and work the cranberry bogs and the factories in Pawtucket, in Rhode Island, and in Providence. And then they start to call, they start to get to establish community and bring their families here. And so Cape Verdeans have never had to ask the question, you know, who are we? I mean, they always saw themselves as Cape Verdean. But in the context of the United States, that's a very different story. So they see the mistreatment that African-Americans have in the U.S., so U.S.-born blacks, and then they see the treatment of immigrants as well from Europe, from all over, basically. And then so they become insular. They start to, they keep to themselves and start to form community. And so, again, the question of identity, it's not as simple as, well, Cape Verdeans don't want to be considered black or African, but it was a lot of question of survival and the witnessing of the trauma that the African-American community and other immigrants, because I wouldn't call the African-American community immigrants per se, but immigrant groups went through.
So where are the largest Cape Verdean communities here in the U.S.? Where are the folks?
Sure. The largest community is concentrated in the New England area, largest populations in Brockton. So, for example, the city of Brockton has 50% population Cape Verdean. You also have Dorchester communities, of course, Providence and Pawtucket. But you're starting to see communities also developing and growing in other parts of the United States. In California, for example, in North and South Carolina, and I live in Charlotte, so there's a growing community, and we have our own association there. In Georgia, particularly Atlanta, Pennsylvania areas, and also Ohio.
Can you tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to the United States?
Sure. My dad was, he worked on ships in Holland. And if I'm not mistaken, the company that he worked for was sold to another company. And because of the uncertainty of that position, he decided to go back to Cape Verde. And after working different jobs, he decided to try his luck in the United States. So like most Cape Verdeans, he had family here. There was a couple of great aunts that I had that were here. And my dad decided to come first. He came by himself. And then my sisters and my mom and I, we joined my dad about a year later, nine months to a year later, in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. And I was a teenager when that happened.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What was that transition like?
Oh, very difficult. For me, at least, you had a teenage girl trying to adjust, like, you know, adjust to life with parents in a brand new country. I had a lot more responsibilities than I did in Cape Verde. There we had basically a community of people that helped us, that raised us, you know, an extended family and friends. And here it was just us, and we had to fend for ourselves. So I wouldn't call it traumatic. I would just call it very challenging. But we made it. We made it. And we always worked hard to make sure that our parents knew that. And when I say we, I mean my sisters and I. We always worked hard to make sure that our parents knew that we were thankful and appreciative for the sacrifices that they made by leaving Cape Verde, their beloved homeland, you know, as underdeveloped as it was, that was home. That was home for all of us. And so it is traumatic to leave your home to try to live somewhere else and to make the ultimate sacrifice for your children to have a better life. And I'd like to think that my parents accomplished their mission.
And so tell us about your path to Providence College.
Sure. So my path to Providence College begins at Joseph Jenks Junior High School in Pawtucket, where I met the most wonderful mentor ever. Her name was Patricia Anderson. She was my English teacher. She taught me how to read and write in English and how to be a feminist and to be empowered as a woman, to not be apologetic about my identity as a Cape Verdean woman. And she encouraged my parents to help me apply to the Lincoln School for Girls in Providence. And so that was a trajectory of my life. And Providence College, it was actually because I was so into sports. And I knew that I wanted to be a Friar. I wanted to play basketball. And yeah, so that didn't quite work out. I didn't quite play basketball for the Lady Friars, but for 3 out of the 4 years, my roommates were basketball players, and they are now lifelong friends. And one in particular, Dana Simonelli, number 44, is one of my best friends and an auntie to my children. And she comes down to Charlotte often to visit. So I have wonderful memories of my time here. I was a Martin Luther King Junior Scholar, and just a community of supportive, wonderful people who made my experience here just beautiful. It wasn't perfect, but that's college. I mean, college is not supposed to be perfect, but it was amazing. And just you know, it was kind of like accomplishing my dreams and my parents' dream. I still have my acceptance letter from Providence College saved in my boxes, because to me it signified what my parents were in the United States for. You know, they said, we're going to the United States for you guys to get an education. And that's why we're there. There were no colleges in Cape Verde at the time. Now there are plenty, but at the time there weren't. And so to me, when I remember that day, it was a snowy day, and I was working for City Year, the community service organization. And I received the letter, and I remember crying and being very excited. Like, just, I remember sitting in silence and just crying and then sharing it with my parents. Yeah.
Wow. So what drew you to political science? Why did that?
Tony Afinia. We were talking. He did it.
We were talking earlier about how he's one of your besties. So can you tell us more about...
Dr. Anthony de Sales Afinia is my mentor, has been since my time at PC. He's the reason I was a political science major and Black Studies minor. The first class I took with him pretty much set the tone. I don't know if many of us know, you probably know, if you've seen Tony now, back then Tony had a ponytail. He had long hair. And he walked into the classroom. It was a Black Studies 101. And he didn't say anything, but he didn't say hello or anything. He just went right into the lecture, the first one. And from that minute, because of what he said was so impactful, I just said, who is this professor and what other courses does he teach? By far, one of the toughest professors that I've had. The expectations were high, but the best experience of my life. Tony has taught me skills inside and outside of the classroom, and he knew my passion for wanting to be an active Cape Verdean who gave back to her community. And from the decisions on creating my own individualized major. So political science technically was not my major. It was an individualized program that Tony helped me create that included mostly classes from political science, economics, and Black studies. So technically the name of my major was Political, Social, and Economic Aspects of the Developing World.
I'm impressed that fit on your diploma.
Right, so my diploma said a little something different. But Tony was that kind of a professor, and I'm sure we can find so many of the professors like him here at PC, who listened to me, right, as a student, who said, okay, well, it sounds to me that, I mean, he carefully listened to me and intentionally helped me create a program of study that fit my needs. I mean, those are the professors that we have here. And so that to me was fascinating. And that is the kind of advising and mentoring that I aspire to do with, you know, with my students now. So, you know, obviously I followed Tony's footsteps into teaching and now we're colleagues. That's so weird. But he's a lifelong friend and mentor.
And so I wondered actually what else you might have drawn from your PC experience now that you are on the other side of the classroom, so to speak, as a political science professor.
So I enjoy the small class learning environment and just the intentional mentoring and advising and friendship created with the student. And I'm that type of teacher, of professor. I intentionally teach, I teach at Johnson C. Smith University. It's a historically Black college and university, but it's also a small school. And the experiences that I had here at PC, those types of intentional friendships and relationships and mentoring that I have with my students, that's pretty much my recreation from my college days, where I have a couch in my office because Tony had a couch in his office because, you know, he wanted to make it a welcoming environment where we'd come in and just chat it up and talk about, personal challenges that I may be having still. You know, for example, we talk about my parents, how to navigate culture and all of that. But also, in the summertime or spring break and, you know, Tony, I'm feeling a little bored. He's like, okay, well, let's write a paper on women and development in Cape Verde. Why not? Okay, sure. Well, years later in grad school, my master's thesis was on women and development in Cape Verde. And so Tony was that kind of, we're going to do that because we're bored and it's summertime and you're my work study. And how about we present it at the National Conference of Black Political Scientists? Hey, why not? Because Tony is one of the original members of that association. And so we presented the research there and then I pursued it as my master's thesis. So again, what I've experienced and I hope that other students have experienced here at PC is this lifelong relationship with the people that you meet here.
So we're recording on March 8th, which is International Women's Day. And I thought we could use that as a jumping off point to talk about your conference.
We have the conference in March because of that reason, to celebrate women and Cape Verdean women in particular. This conference is historical, and it's a first of its kind. There've been other conferences that have dealt with the, that have served as a platform to the Cape Verdean community in general, but none that have specifically talked about the issues and challenges and celebrated Cape Verdean women in particular. And so we're going back again to my graduate school days at Clark Atlanta University, where I felt the need. I said, you know, when I wrap up my graduate studies, I would really like to, you know, to kind of spearhead the effort or to join someone else who's thought about creating a platform for Cape Verdean women to talk about the work that we do. So the conference that is coming up, it's about empowerment. It's about educating the community. It's about listening to the community. And so it's not just for Cape Verdean women. It's for the entire community of people who come in contact with, who are allies of the Cape Verdean community, who may work with the Cape Verdean women, and who just want to understand culturally, politically, and any other ways that they can continue to be of support and a greater ally to the Cape Verdean community, but particularly the women. So we invite everyone, really. And so we'll have high school students all the way up to community supporters, academic scholars. So the conference is really a little bit about, it brings everybody together. So it's not like an academic conference of sorts. We're even going to have a Cape Verdean woman DJ. So that shows you that we're ready for a good time while learning and empowering and celebrating as well.
Tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that Cape Verdean women are experiencing and some of the issues.
Absolutely. And some of them, I would say that they also are similar to challenges that other women, other immigrant women face. So we're looking at issues related to immigration, right? Immigration status, violence in our communities, particularly sexual and physical violence, issues of empowerment and access. And so these, again, can be, they're not unique to Cape Verdean women, but there are certain aspects of how Cape Verdean women navigate it because of cultural nuances that become important, right? So we want Cape Verdean women's voices to be heard and for us to realize how some of these challenges are specific to Cape Verdean women, right, as a community. And so that's where the conference comes in, right? So we know that some of these challenges that I mentioned, they exist in most communities, but the way that Cape Verdean women navigate it may be, you know, there's nuances to that. So we offer that platform. But it's also, you know, there will be some heavy topics, right? But there is also a celebration of Cape Verdean women academics, for example, and the work that they do. In addition to Cape Verdean women who do the work in the community as advocates and as activists. And I would not be right if I didn't mention the all-male panel, because culturally, we cannot talk about empowering and celebrating Cape Verdean women if we don't include the men into the conversation. So there will be, we have a panel called Cabo Verdean Men and Boys as Allies. And we have, it's a panel comprised of a political scientist, a social worker, a state elected a political official from Evandro Carvalho. He's from Massachusetts. And a hip hop artist. I'm just trying to remember the last person. But it's going to be awesome. I'm excited, a little nervous, but yeah.
What's the turnout been? I mean, this is your second year at the conference. This is the second conference you've held.
Yes. And so that's part of a little bit of nerve-wracking that I'm feeling right now. So in 2016, and we're so thankful to Providence College Office of Institutional Diversity for being so supportive, and other offices on campus as well, who've just helped us with so many different logistical things. So we had, because we had a clicker, 259 people in 2016. And we opened up sales online to about 200, and those sold out really, very quickly. And all I'm saying is people better get here early, because Slavin Hall, 64 Hall holds, as we have it, 350 people. So if you're not here on time, you're just going to be missing out on an amazing educational time. So it's getting a lot of buzz. I'm excited and a little nervous about the amount of people that might turn out. But that's a good problem to have, I think.
Absolutely. Selling out 64 Hall is definitely a good problem to have. And can you tell us about the theme for the conference this year?
Sure.
In terms of rebranding?
Absolutely. So we're rebranding the image of the Cape Verdean women. That's a recurring theme. The idea came from, so let me say that in 2018, the theme is really about empowering and healing, sharing our story, right? But we have the recurring conference theme of rebranding the image of the Cape Verdean women, because in popular media, when you do a search for Cape Verdean women, what comes up normally is just images of that refer to our physical aspects and just our physical beauty. And what we're basically saying, Amina Fernandes Pilgrim and I, my co-founder, that there's nothing wrong with how beautiful physically we are, right? There's nothing wrong with that. We celebrate that. But the issue becomes when that is the only narrative you have about Cape Verdean women, that we are more than just our pretty faces and our amazing Africanness beauty that is out there, right? We don't want that to be the only narrative. It sends the wrong message, especially in 2018, in an age where we're celebrating women for their capacities, and we're seeking access to equal rights for women, and with the Me Too campaign. So these movements and campaigns are raising some really important questions and conversations about women and how we all should be celebrated. And so we're moving the conversation and trying to rebrand the image of the woman to, okay, pretty, beautiful, yes, physically, but also smart and educated and a mother, a psychologist, a community activist, a university professor like me, critically thinking human being. So beyond our physical attributes and into what intentional and amazing contributions have we made to overall American society and culture.
It seems like the challenge there is, how do you capture that in an image? That's another topic.
Absolutely right.
Well, Charissa, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate your time. Subscribe to the Providence College Podcast in all the usual places, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you like what you hear, please review and share with others. Thanks for listening, and go Friars.